Welcome to episode 16 of the Hello Body Podcast with your hosts, Melissa Sacalario and myself, Katie Weber. Melissa is a registered dietitian and certified personal trainer, and I am a certified health coach and yoga instructor, as well as the author of the book Worth It, A Journey to Food and Body Freedom. We are two friends and colleagues who specialize in non-diet approaches to health and wellness, including intuitive eating and the health at every size approach to nutrition and movement. In this episode, we interview Jess Keough, founder of The Body Positive in Australia. The Body Positive is a counseling practice built on the principles of unconditional self-acceptance and body positivity. Jess is a qualified mental health and counseling professional with a degree in psychological science and a bachelor's degree in communications. The Body Positive was established to fulfill the need for body positive services in the mental health industry, and Jess's unique background in psychology, communications, and mental health allows her to support clients who experience a range of emotional, interpersonal, and mental health concerns. We talk with Jess about the sheer emotional toll of dieting and chasing thinness for years, and how much we lose as humans when we tie our happiness to weight loss. Jess also tells us all about exposure therapy and the vital role it can play in diet and body image recovery work. And we also find out what the heck a Causey is. We really enjoyed this conversation, and I know you will too.
Oh, so I guess we could jump right into this.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Very excited. Me too. I've loved listening to your podcast, guys.
Really?
Yep. Yeah,
we're still surprised when anybody actually says they listen to.
it's really good and really relatable, Katie. I think we're the same person as well, by the way. So
I was actually just telling you that before you got on. I was saying to Melissa, I was like, Jess really relates to a lot of my ADHD posts. I think we need to talk.
I was gonna actually the one this morning. I was like, I was gonna write a message, and then I was like, no, I don't have time. I was like, I'm gonna email her because that sounds so like me.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
We'll talk. Don't worry. We'll talk.
Amazing. Sounds good.
Okay. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background with your own body image and food and dieting and kind of how your journey brought you to becoming a body positive counselor and coach.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a very long journey. Started when I was quite young. I lived in a sort of environment where there was a lot of focus on weight and health. So that's sort of been the norm for me forever. You know, everyone around me was either being good or being bad or starting tomorrow or, you know, they were never drinking again or they were never eating this type of food again. And then, of course, a couple of days pass and then they are, you know. So it was that sort of extreme thinking around good and bad and food. So I remember like as little as probably year six, which is 11, age 11, going on holidays with my parents, and there was always a lot of talk about other people and their weight and what they were eating and, you know, look, there's a smaller person, look, they're eating fruit, and look at the bigger person, they're eating whatever they were eating, I don't know, bacon and eggs or something, I've no idea, but there was just this focus on size and what people were putting into their body and this sort of polarization, you know, good and bad. So as a child I was very athletic, played a lot of sport. I loved sport, but always put a lot of pressure on myself to sort of win and be the best. And so while it was fun, it was very competitive. And I think my first memory of tracking my food was probably when I was about 11, and my mum wanted to take me to a sports dietitian because I was quite competitive with sports and she wanted to make sure I was getting enough nutrition. And so it was so funny. That's the first time that I sort of started taking data of what I was eating. And I remember, you know, my mum did it from a loving point of view too. You know, at the end of the day, she'd be like, "What? So what did you have today so we can tell the dietitian?" Which is just like red flag. We talk about it now. And I'd tell her and then I'd be like, "Oh, and I had a lolly." And she's like, "One lolly?" And I'm like, "Oh." And I'd start to feel bad about the fact that I had a lolly. Not that she was making me feel bad, but I was just conscious of every little thing that was starting to go into my body. So I guess that sort of kicked things off at age 11. So that's pretty early. And I sort of had some other food issues when I was around 13. I was diagnosed with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, around contamination fear around food. So foodborne illnesses such as salmonella and stuff. So I became really paranoid about making sure my chicken wasn't pink and things like that. And I became really, really thin because I wasn't eating much because I was so scared of food and contamination. So there were lots of little food issues while I was younger. I overcame that with CBT with an awesome therapist that I still see today. And then my weight came back to, in inverted commas, normal. And I guess, you know, just growing up, I always had a love of fashion. My mum used to work in the fashion industry. I was always into fashion and models, and I always wanted to look like the models I saw in magazines. So I remember being about 14 when my actual first diet started, in an effort to look like the people I was seeing in magazines. So I did a juice cleanse under the guise of health. My mum and I did it together, and it was absolute torture. It was the first time I had actually deprived my body of food, and I still remember that feeling of deprivation and just hating it, but also feeling so bad that I couldn't tolerate it and I couldn't follow the diet and that there must be something wrong with me. And this is a juice fast for 3 days, like ridiculous. I look back on it now and I'm like, oh my God, that is ridiculous. But that just stands out in my head as such a landmark time where I just sort of went, okay, this is where I started really getting entrenched in that diet culture, and also blaming myself for not being able to follow those diets. So I think from then on I was always trying to be healthy and on some sort of health kick, always sort of turning over a new leaf on Mondays and trying to exercise every day, or only eat fruit for snacks, or only eat 3 meals and no snacks, or, you know, all these little rules. And then so things sort of carried on as that was, not too serious, but always, you know, always in the back of my head wishing I was slimmer, wishing I looked a certain way. And I do also remember receiving comments from well-meaning relatives that they were worried about the types of food I was eating and about how they think, you know, I might have been gaining weight. And that really affected me. That really, really affected me. I often, when I'd get those comments, and disclaimer, I was in the normal weight range, even though we know the BMI is bullshit. If we're talking BMI, I was in the normal weight range, and that really affected me. I felt so, so guilty, you know, more so that I'd people were worried about me and that I'd let them down somehow, but I hadn't, because, you know, there was nothing wrong with me. And then I think things really kicked off probably just before my 18th birthday. So in Australia, when you turn 18, you can go out and drink. So it's this big thing. It's in the States, I believe it's 21, but in Australia it's 18. And I was like, oh, this is it. I'm gonna get really skinny, and I'm gonna be at my goal weight by my 18th, and I'm just gonna make this big entrance, and it's gonna be amazing. So I joined Weight Watchers, Katie. And it was so awesome, so I thought. It was so easy. The weight just fell off. I ate my points. I drank my diet drinks. I had all my diet cheeses and yogurts and little cake snacky things full of preservatives. And it was awesome. It was great. I got to have my cake and eat it too. And so I turned 18 and I'd lost probably, I won't say figures, but I did lose a significant amount of weight, and the attention I got was really rewarding to me then, really validating. I really felt I'd achieved something. But I still wasn't at my actual goal. which is ridiculous to me now saying that. And
which also the goal that you arbitrarily set for yourself with no actual guidance or medical intervention. I just want to point that out.
100%. It was this magical number in my head that I had to get to. And when I did, I'd be really, really happy. And it's ridiculous. And the thing that sort of, I guess, fueled it on was, you know, you go somewhere like Weight Watchers, which seems like a very positive environment. You know, they're cheering you on. They're cheering you on to get down to that goal weight. And it's like, oh, this really isn't healthy. Anyway, so I didn't get to goal, but I maintained my weight for about a year, and I sort of started to develop really unhealthy mechanisms for staying slim because, as you know, dieting gets harder and harder and harder. So that's when I developed an eating disorder, bulimia, and, you know, again, I thought I could have my cake and eat it too, quite literally. So I'd do things like if we were going out at night or something, I'd ask my friends if we were going out, and if not, I wouldn't eat that day. It was looking back, it's really sad how it sort of dictated my life. I remember being my absolute smallest and a family member commenting and saying, oh, you look great, but you know what, you probably just need 4 more kilos and you'll be just right. And I just remember going, oh, my God, okay, so I'm still not there, you know. Feeling challenged and also really perplexed and upset that I'd just been trying so hard at this thing and it wasn't enough, you know? And I think it's those comments from family members that somehow they're from a well-meaning place, somehow, I guess, but they're just so damaging because they stay with you, you know? They stay with you. And then, you know, it got harder and harder to maintain. I started restricting more and then binging more and then put on an incredible amount of weight over a few years, and then all the compliments stopped. And I think, Katie, you spoke about the deafening silence that happens when that occurs. Mm-hmm. And it's just all that reinforcement goes and you're sort of getting bigger, and I felt really ashamed, like I was this big disappointment to my parents and my family, you know. You'd receive comments like, oh, you're really pretty but your weight really spoils you, you know. That sticks out in my mind a lot. And I just remember that silence of no compliments paired with that look of worry and concern from people. And I just felt bad for them because I was like, I've done something wrong to upset them and I need to fix it. So jumped back onto Weight Watchers, joined the gym, lost all the weight again. Like clockwork, the compliments came flooding in. I kept this weight off for a while, got pregnant, had my first beautiful daughter, put the weight back on, then lost the weight again through Weight Watchers. You can see this cycle. You can see this complete cycle happening. Harder and harder every time to lose the weight. And then eventually with my second daughter, I just couldn't shift it, you know. It was so hard. And I was engaging in a lot of eating that I thought was emotional eating, but I now realize it was a reaction to restriction. So I think my turning point with all this was years ago. I stomped into my psychologist's office and I said, I've been seeing her since I was 11, and I said, you've got to help me once and for all lose this 30 kilos before I get married. I just need you to tell me what my personality is like and tell me how to do it. What's the best way for me to do it? And she just looked at me and she's like, I'm not going to help you do that. I'm not. There's nothing wrong with you, Jess. What's wrong with diet culture? And I was so annoyed because that's not the answer I wanted. I wanted her to put me on a plan, and I wanted her to say, well, you know, your personality is like this, so maybe you should try this or this. And I was so frustrated. And I left her office that day and I just sat with that thought. And she must have implanted some sort of seed in my mind, because probably a week after, I started to think to myself, what if I could just stop dieting, stop waiting until I got to goal to start enjoying my life? What would that look like? What if? So I sort of started experimenting with a bit of exposure therapy. So I just started doing the things I wanted to do despite the way I thought I looked. So wearing swimmers to the beach, wearing singlets and shorts, and just started doing things because there were so many things I wasn't doing because I wasn't at goal, and, you know, my life was essentially on hold until I was that, you know, life-changing number, which actually doesn't change anything. And so I did a brainstorm around what my life would look like, and I thought about how my weight and my perception of myself was stopping me enjoying things like the beach, because the beach for me, I love it so much, but there were so many years I didn't go because I felt like I wasn't worthy to go because of the way I looked. You know, so I started just living the way I wanted to live. And it absolutely, that conversation with my psychologist absolutely changed my life, because as someone working in, and I was working in mental health at the time too, so I was still entrenched so heavily in that damaging behavior while also working in mental health. So that's such a paradox for me. I find that really interesting to grapple. But anyway, around that time, for some reason, I picked up the book Intuitive Eating by Evelyn Tribouley and Elise Rech, and I started reading it, and I was like, this book was written for me. This is my book. I couldn't believe it. I worked really hard at each of the principles, and it was really uncomfortable work, really, really uncomfortable. But, you know, I sat with that discomfort. I worked through the different principles, and I learned to listen to my body and to not be on a diet through all my scales, and absolutely changed my life. So, you know, and as I said, it's for most of the time I was working in mental health and counselling and studying psychology, yet I could not see the effect that this dieting cycle was having on me. It was bizarre. And I think it's because it was entrenched for such a young age. So, and it was really sad because I was held back from travel, from outings, holidays, dates, even because of the perception I had of myself and my lack of value if I wasn't a certain weight. So it was going through that experience. You know, I've always been so passionate about mental health and psychology, and I love working in the field. But I think going through that experience is what led me to want to specialize in body positivity because, you know, even in the mental health sector, I do work with a lot of people who hold beliefs that are entrenched in diet culture, and you see it come out in their work with people when they're working with clients. And I really, really wanted to offer a service, a mental health and counselling service that was underpinned by body positivity, anti-diet, intuitive eating, and all those amazing things. So that's the short story, actually, of what led me here.
Oh my goodness! I've taken all these notes because I didn't want to interrupt you. It's so fascinating. But man, you really articulate very well the emotional toll that dieting takes on us in terms of, you know, like we've talked about this in other ways too, which is like, what are all the things that you're giving up for this pursuit of a smaller body? And I feel like that was kind of my aha moment. Yeah. Which was I was like at my smallest, I was a Weight Watchers leader, and my goal was like when I get to a goal weight, I'm finally going to buy myself a bikini because I've never been confident enough to wear a bikini, and that was like this thing I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I remember having this moment. I'm like in the Target changing room, trying on a bikini, looking at myself in the mirror and thinking, no, I don't know. My stomach isn't perfectly flat. Wow. I mean, I was like, I had two children at this point. Like, yeah. What was I thinking? I don't even know. Like, looking back, I'm like, that's not even possible. No. But like, I remember just being so upset. Like, I had gotten to this moment, this milestone, and I tried on the bikini and I was like, no, I still have cellulite on my butt. Yeah. My stomach isn't flat. I'm not ready. And I think that was this moment of realization for me where I was like, oh, I'm never going to be ready. Like, that's just never Like there's, and then I, at some point I remember also seeing this quote, and I wish I knew who said this. I've seen it a few times in different ways, which is like, if I lose weight, I'll be happy. And then when you've lost the weight and you realize you're not happy, you think, well, I have to lose more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that was that. Yeah. Like that was that moment of realization for me where I sort of was like, yeah, this is never going to end well.
No,
like there's never going to be a moment where I'm like, finally I've hit this moment of happiness and perfection and everything's yeah. great. Like I was like, no, the more I am trying to change myself, yeah. the unhappier I'm going to be.
Yes.
And that was like a big connection for
yes.
me. And I think that that's why you sort of want to then turn around and help others, because you realize that there's like these aha moments, these sort of ways in which it all came together where you're like, I'm a smart feminist. Like, why was I so entrenched in diet culture?
Oh my
for so
gosh, far? I know. And my mom was a feminist too. And I'm like, what is this? Why is this the way it is?
I think it really comes down to like the beliefs that people hold that are so yeah. strongly tied to diet culture that yeah. they've been around for so long that people yeah. just accept these ideas and beliefs as truths, undeniable. And like you were speaking before about like how it's in your field with mental health practitioners and, you know, mm-hmm. prior to me becoming more involved in like body positivity and, you know, eating disorder recovery, I would work with, you know, psychologists and mental health providers that would tell, you know, my clients very damaging things about like weight loss and just yeah. diet culture in general. So yeah. like, it's so like wonderful to hear that there's practitioners like you out there that's not going to encourage, you know, these dangerous or faulty beliefs that are not rooted in truth. Yeah. And they're just simply, you know, perpetuating these negative things.
Yeah.
And, well, and not only that, but then also like with diet culture, like this ingrained belief in all of us that if something isn't working, it's because there's something wrong with me, you know, yeah. like yeah. where did that come from? Like,
absolutely.
Why do we, you know, where is our consumer advocacy? All of these people going back to Weight Watchers over and over and over again, blaming themselves because they were the ones who failed and never yeah. thinking it was the program that failed. And now I'm like, it's so obvious.
I know. And if you look at the data, it is obvious, but we yeah. kind of gloss over that. So it's really,
because we all want to believe the, you know, this grand dream, like
yeah.
like for you it was your 18th birthday, for me it was my prom, like for Katie it was yeah. the bikini, like it's yes. this it's this big lead up event
yep.
that like we'll finally have
yes.
everything that's promised to us
yep.
when we meet that thing, and you know what,
exactly.
we get there and we're freaking disappointed, and it's
yep.
never enough for ourselves or anybody yep. else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
So I just want to back up a little bit, because
yeah.
you said something in your intro that mm-hmm. I think is really important and probably something that you have to help people a lot with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we get those comments from our family mm-hmm. and our friends about how positive it is for us, our changing bodies, mm-hmm. and we really hold on to that like validation of all our hard work.
Mm.
How do you help people kind of break that cycle of looking to outside sources to validate ourselves, our worthiness, our enoughness?
Mm.
'Cause I feel like that's something that's is super challenging for even myself.
Yeah.
And I feel
yeah.
like a lot of people really struggle with that.
Yeah, that's huge. And, you know, we have gone through our whole lives usually being validated by the people around us, and we look for that and we crave that. I would probably say I try and encourage people to look at their individual strengths outside of the areas of any sort of body image thing and find things that they enjoy outside of that, because they'll be able to fulfill those sort of validations themselves, because they'll be getting feedback from what they're doing, and it will be empowering them, and they'll be enjoying it, and they probably won't be looking for outside validation. They'll be getting it from within. I'd also say with that sort of stuff, I encourage my clients to have sort of open conversations with their their family members, if possible, around the effects of commentary around weight and appearance, and just say things like, you know, it's really not helpful for me because it makes me feel like all my value's in my appearance. So I'd really love it if you would try and stop saying those sorts of things to me. So I think it comes down to openly communicating when you can. Sometimes those conversations do not go down well. And also finding things outside of, I guess, things that provide you with that intrinsic motivation that's going to be validating by doing it in itself, rather than doing things that you feel you need to do to please others to get that external validation, if that makes sense.
Oh, 100%. I feel like that comes down to like the shoulding, like, oh, yeah, I should do this, you know, because this is what is expected of me. Like, exactly. I should go to church every Sunday because that's what my family expects, but I'd much rather be with my family over pancakes. I don't know.
Exactly. And getting in touch with those things that are important to you. So you're spending your time doing those things rather than things that other people expect of you that you're going to get the validation from when it's not even intrinsically rewarding, if that makes sense. Mm,
that reminds me of what you were talking about with the what if. You know, like, what if I just started enjoying myself now, you know?
Yeah.
And what would happen? What if I just stopped caring about what my relatives had to say about my body? Like, what would that feel like?
Exactly.
What would that look like?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's my favorite question and brainstorming activity with my clients, because it gives you sort of this permission to just dream really big and go, what would my life look like if I didn't have all this weight, body image crap going on? What would it look like? And it's so fun, and it's so, you know, the things you come out with is incredible.
It's limitless. It's I feel like diet culture just like it makes us so small in our dreams and everything, because all of our energy is just going into our bodies ourselves. It closes us off.
Yeah. And the other thing I noticed too, which is like when you sort of embrace that mindset, how it affects you in so many other ways, because you start to make that connection where you're like, this is a feminist issue, right?
Yes,
like
you're
saying, like we are being told to be small. Oh. And so if I just decided to be confident and not wait for somebody to tell me it was time or give me permission, not, you know, it affects your business. It affects your relationships. Oh. It affects every part of your life. You
Absolutely.
Know, that was the thing that amazed me about intuitive eating, was once I started eating intuitively, like I was listening to my intuition in all aspects of my life. That voice just became so much louder.
Yes. Yes. And you trust that voice. And I think I heard a quote. This is one of my favorite quotes around this sort of thing. It's when you start loving yourself, you start to lose interest in others who don't love you. So I think that comes back to your question, Melissa, about, you know, people looking for validation in others. I think when you do start to really take care of yourself and love yourself, I think then you start to lose interest in the validation that comes externally, because you've got your own back.
Here I was thinking that was just the 30s. I thought that just came with age. Look at that.
Yeah, that reminds me of my favorite quote, which is the when you're in your 20s, you worry what everybody's thinking about you. When you're in your 40s, you stop worrying what anybody's thinking about you. And then in your 60s, you realize nobody was actually thinking about you just to begin with.
That's awesome. Love it.
So now we have talked, I personally have benefited immensely from cognitive behavioral therapy. I know you mentioned it, and you work with that and your clients. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to hear a little bit more about CBT, but I also am really curious about exposure therapy from both of you. I know, Melissa, you also went through that in your recovery, because I feel like I kind of intuitively came to it with sort of ideas with like changing my Instagram feed and looking at more happy, larger bodies and stuff like that. But like, I never realized that there was like an actual intentional therapy behind this. Talk more about exposure therapy and what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So exposure therapy is my absolute favorite form of therapy. It's a part of CBT because it can yield such great results in such a short amount of time. So I think, you know, I think it's really important to put work into our thinking and talking things through. But it's our behavior that provides such a powerful mechanism for change. So the idea behind exposure therapy is that the more you're exposed to what you fear, the less intense that fear is going to become. So we habituate to things. We just do. That's how our brains work. So in therapy, you're systematically exposed to a fear that negatively impacts your life. So until you're no longer afraid. So if it was something like flying, a completely non-weight related issue, you would perhaps start by going to an airport and maybe watching the planes come in and go out, and maybe next getting onto a plane or getting onto a plane simulator or something like that, and building up until you're actually on a flight. So it's taking those little steps to habituate to that fear. So in sort of exposure therapy for body image, we do the same thing. So it might be you want to go to the beach, but you're afraid. So what I would normally do with clients is put together a bit of a plan of what their goals are, what they want to see, what they want to be doing, what they don't want to be afraid of anymore. So if it's going to the beach and wearing a swimsuit, we might and I'll do this with them sometimes. I'll go to the beach with them sometimes, or I'll just write a program for them and then they do it themselves. So they might go to the beach in their activewear and just walk up and down the beach. And then the next time they might go in shorts and a t-shirt if they feel okay to do that the next time. And then gradually building up to being in swimmers. And that might take weeks, it might take months, it might take a few days. You know, it depends on how ingrained that fear is in people. But I guess with exposure therapy, it extinguishes a fear in sort of three main ways. So you've got your habituation. So if you continually confront a fear, as I said before, you'll eventually get used to it. You'll habituate and your feelings of anxiety will reduce over time. And the more you carry out that behavior, the less anxiety provoking it's going to be until it sort of fades completely. So if you wear a swimsuit to the beach, eventually you're not going to be afraid of it. Eventually you just won't, because that's how your brain works. Another way exposure therapy works is violation of expectancies. So what fuels a lot of people's anxiety is the expectation that something bad's going to happen if they carry out a behavior like wearing a swimsuit to the beach. So when we do something that we fear and that terrible outcome doesn't happen, you know, often you go to the beach, no one's looking at you, they're more focused on themselves or actually enjoying being at the beach. When that terrible outcome doesn't happen, our fear of that activity reduces, you know, and becomes extinct. So that actually often happens a lot. I'll be speaking with people and they'll go, I went to the beach, Jess, and nothing bad happened. Like I went and I wore my swimsuit and no one came up and said anything to me. And it's like, wow, you know, because going to the beach is a normal part of life, but it's so many people are so fearful of it. Another thing that happens with exposure therapy is self-efficacy. So people who successfully engage in it, they'll experience an increase in self-efficacy. So doing those things that make us afraid, you become more confident, and then you sort of overcome what frightens you. And then I guess that works in a bit of a cycle, because the more you do it, the more self-confident you become, and it sort of fuels that behavior more. So, so that's sort of how exposure therapy works. You can do it in two ways. You can use graded exposure, which is gradually exposing yourself to the fear. So as I was saying before, if you're wanting to go to the beach, you could potentially start actually going to the beach in your clothes and something you're comfortable wearing, going for walks or whatever, and gradually build up to swimmers. or there's flooding, which is what I actually did because I just wanted to get it over and done with, which is, it's pretty much, it's not for the faint-hearted. It's you basically face your biggest fear head on. So, yeah, not recommended for some people, definitely. So you, in that regard, you know, it can be really confronting, but you would just go to the beach in your swimwear. You just go to the beach in your cozy. And do you guys say cozy, by the way?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh my God, that is brilliant.
I'd just Google it later. But
cozy is a swimsuit, and it's the word I always use, and people are like, what are you talking about, Jess?
I thought you were talking about a blanket. To be honest, I'm like, oh, a cozy, yeah.
I thought it was like a cover-up or something.
That is brilliant. Oh, my God. I need to be mindful of that. So with flooding, you know, you'll probably get to that endpoint quicker, but also there's lots of opportunities for you to go, this is too overwhelming, and pull back. So it's deciding which way you want to approach it. But yeah, that's how exposure therapy works. And that's why I love it, because it is so practical. You know, it's pushing through that fear and knowing that if we just keep doing it, we're going to be okay. It's not going to make us frightened anymore.
Yeah. You know, I love that you said it was practical, because I think, you know, a lot of the time when people leave dieting, there is this, there's a real sort of inner battle where you still feel like you're a failure. Yeah. You know, you failed at something. Yeah. And so a lot of the time, just reading intuitive eating is not enough.
No.
And so, or even just like, you know, it's little steps that you look back and like, obviously exposure therapy is a lot more than what I thought it was, which was just like exposing yourself to different bodies. Like, this is real, like physical.
Oh, yes.
Putting yourself out there. Like, I was thinking of like just changing, you know, what you expose yourself to, but this is actually like exposing yourself.
Yes. Ooh, yeah. No, but it is exposing yourself, but that's a really good point too. That is a form of exposure therapy, because particularly with fat phobia, you know, mm-hmm. we are afraid of it. So looking at it and exposing yourselves to all different types of bodies through social media or whatever you want it to be, that's also considered exposure therapy.
Yeah, and I think it is a huge part of body positive recovery too.
Yeah.
At least it was for me. But yeah. I think, you know, I think a lot of the time we don't really sort of know what to do when we leave dieting. And, and so I love the fact that these are like really practical, active steps, because, oh, that's what I was going to say. When we leave dieting, a lot of the time we don't take it seriously enough. Like, I think for me and my own journey, it wasn't, I mean, I developed a full blown binge eating disorder from Weight Watchers, you know? And like, I joke about it where I'm like, I went to Weight Watchers and all I got was this lousy binge eating disorder. When I did leave and when I left diet culture behind, an extra step for me to really take it seriously and to view my behavior as a disorder that I needed to be in recovery. And what did that recovery look like? And what are those active steps? And I think sometimes that connection isn't made when people first leave dieting, that they're just sort of like, oh, I give up. I can't do this anymore. So I'm just going to kind of float in this sense of just like not doing anything and then also still feeling like a failure, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. A feeling of sort of, you've been worn down by diet culture rather than you're just walking away from it because it absolutely sucks.
Right.
That's interesting.
So I love the fact that the work you're doing is so, it's just building up this new construction, this new house.
And I think that's the practical side of it is my favorite part, because I think that's when you can see the big behavior changes.
So you talked about both of the exposure therapies that I was fortunate enough to experience in recovery, although at the time it was not fortunate at all. My first experience with exposure therapy was through flooding. So you show up to, you know, outpatient eating disorder therapy and they're like, hey, guess what? Lunch is on us today.
Oh, gosh.
And that's like, what? Like, yeah. we're eating what? Like, you ordered who? And we're eating this now? Like, you know, when you're that wrapped up in like food rules and like, I don't know exactly what I'm eating, how many macros, like it can really be overwhelming. Like, I remember like crying through meals, but I'll tell you, it was those experiences that really helped me kind of expand in terms of like being able to allow other foods into my life and accept them. Yeah. And, you know, the other version was just as helpful, like, you know, to do the, like, for me, it wasn't a bathing suit. It was something as simple as wearing like horizontal stripes on my spandex.
Wow.
Like,
okay. Yep.
So like, oh, I can wear this, you know, fashion faux pas and it's okay. And I, you know, because like, you know, you supposedly look larger in that kind of stripe. So, you know, it was like these little things that really like, you realize when you're doing them, like, oh, that bad thing really didn't happen, or like it really wasn't as scary. Yes. And, you know, it's really important to just remind people that, like, you don't have to do those things alone. Like, that's why, you know, Jess is here and, you know, other counselors are here and, you know, dietitians, people, there's support out there just, you know, to do these things. So you don't have to feel like, oh, I have all these food rules. All I have, you know, I'm so disordered right now. I'm acknowledging this. Yeah. And, you know, exposure therapy might help, but you don't have to just jump right into all these action steps. Like, you can actually go to a professional who will give you these little baby steps and, you know, your journey can start from, you know, there.
Absolutely. And I think when you start doing the behaviors, I think that's when some issues will come up for you that you'll need to process with your therapist as well. So it's when you start to do them, you realize things that you that sort of weren't in the forefront of your mind, and you go, oh, hang on, I'm doing this behavior because of this reason, and I remember this happening when I was younger around this, and then you have to process that. So often it is such a process of doing the actions and then processing the emotions and thoughts around it as well.
Well, and this is also brings up an interesting kind of, I don't know if it's like a schism in the body positive community, but it's like these, you know, people, women who are in smaller bodies, who are like on social media, who are talking about body positivity, who are trying really, really hard to squeeze and show you the little bit of cellulite that they have and how they've come to peace with it.
Yes.
And then women in larger bodies who are like, what is happening? Like, like, you know, where it sort of feels like, I get that I'm happy for you that you are now loving your body and that you are not in a place of shame.
Yeah.
However, you're not addressing the like overarching social, you know, issues around weight stigma and what it's like to live in a larger body and how terrifying that can be.
Yeah.
And so there ends up being this kind of back and forth, which is like, well, you're not large enough to be body positive. And sort of feeling like there's, I don't know. I don't really have any kind of final answer. It's just something that I observe and watch and am fascinated by.
But you know, absolutely know what you're saying. I absolutely see that.
And
an answer is there. It's kind of like,
I think it's really just sort of, you just have to find your people within the movement who relate, who do you relate to the most and just understand that other people have their audience and they have their people and they're not going to relate to you. And I don't think anyone benefits from infighting within the movement, but I think when it comes to like talking about exposure therapy and talking about things that terrify you and realizing that, like, you know, me getting on social media and playing with my belly fat because it used to terrify me is not going to be helpful for somebody who has lived in a large body their whole life and is dealing with like a whole other level of issues.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, it's something that I mean, it's certainly irritates me to, as a woman in perimenopause who will never dance on a TikTok video. You know, I don't know how I feel about all of these like young 20 something women doing it, but I also like, you know, I also know how, that how important it is in anyone's journey, regardless of your size, to come to a place of self-love.
Yes. And that's the hard thing, because you don't want to invalidate the experiences of people who are rolling over trying to get those stomach rolls. You don't want to invalidate that, because that could be really terrifying for someone. And that's you know, that to me is brave, because they're doing something that terrifies them. But at the same time, you're right, it's like, oh, but it's not really about that. But just getting into that conversation is really hard, because my mind just sort of blows over that. I'm kind of like, I kind of get paralyzed with that, because I don't really know the answer, you know?
Ooh, me neither. I regret bringing it up.
No, don't regret bringing it up. I actually brought something up similar on Instagram the other day about people who think the body positive movement's unhealthy. And I did not get the responses I thought I'd get. I got more responses around the whole, it's not for, you know, it doesn't cater for smaller people, and it sort of discriminates against smaller people, and people in smaller bodies should also be able to sort of engage in body positivity in the whole movement. And then it started that sort of thing, and I'm like, this isn't what I signed up for.
I know, yeah.
And there was something similar I saw going around on Instagram. I think it was Sammy Previtt, the dietitian. She was basically like trolled by a doctor that, like, you know how like a lot of the Hayes and body positive dietitians will say like things like, you should listen to your body and respect it and eat when you're hungry. Yep. And the doctor kind of like voiced over and did a video of like, it's dangerous to tell a person to eat when they're hungry if they have like these hormonal imbalances. And she went into all the hormones like ghrelin and things like that.
Yeah.
But what she wasn't taking into account is like, intuitive eating, like Evan and Elise come right out and say, this is not for everybody. Yeah. And I think the same thing goes for these movements. Like, I look at them as, take what you can from them that's going to be helpful for you and apply it to your life. And if it's not helpful, leave it, because this is, at the end of the day, these are people's ideas like coming together and, you know, they're all well-meaning and well-intended, but then everybody gets so caught up in the, you know, it has to be black or white. And that's really not, there's no room for nuance, and that's what has to be there.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing with diet culture as well. It is so polarized. It is so black and white. It's like, we're trying to move away from that.
Yeah. I think that was felt a lot when Lizzo went on a juice cleanse and everybody freaked out and was like, what do I think? What do I do? I don't know. And there's just like too many inconsistencies right now. And everybody was like, blame the culture, not the person. And, you know, there's a lot going on right now. She didn't just sort of like suddenly decide to go on the, you know, like there, it was just like all of a sudden it was like so many layers and nuance, and nobody knew how to respond.
No.
But like you said, Melissa, I think at the end of the day, it's really like, it's, we have to come back to ourselves. Yeah. We have to come back to what works for me. Exactly. And that's when I think the intuitive part of intuitive eating is so important, because really you have to do what you feel is right for you. You have to follow the people who speak to you. You have to just like listen to the gut more than anything else.
Yes. Absolutely.
So what is currently annoying you the most about diet culture this week?
This week I'm annoyed by, I'm just really upset and frustrated about the, but it's not healthy disclaimer about seeing larger bodies and the you're promoting obesity thing. I was actually really upset by the backlash of that awesome Cosmopolitan cover a few weeks back. It made me really sad, because after, you know, for years we've been campaigning for more representation of different size bodies, and, you know, Cosmo came out and did it, and then, I mean, everyone's going to, you know, there's always going to be different opinions, but I was disappointed that people tore that to shreds, you know.
I think that just comes full circle back to where we started, like this whole, like our whole belief system that we have around body size and health is so hijacked by diet culture that we just can't even accept basic body diversity. Like it's not a thing.
It is not a thing.
And people are real, like they get upset. Like they can just not accept that a person could be like outside the BMI, like significantly and still be healthy. It's kind of crazy. Like, people look at my pictures and they're like, oh, you're a picture of health. But, you know, I just got diagnosed with fibromyalgia. I live in chronic pain and discomfort. You know, people would never guess that about me. And then you look at a person who's significantly larger than me that doesn't have a single thing wrong with them, yet they're judged and looked at as unhealthy just because, you know what, their family lineage worked out that they're a little bit larger than the average.
Exactly. And I don't think people get the damage that dieting does to your health and what restriction does to your health and your mental health. Like, are we gonna lump mental health into this whole but it's not healthy picture ever? Because that sort of seems to go unrecognized, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, like we talked about before, like all of the different ways in which your life suffers when you are when you are chasing this one very narrow definition of health, you need to sort of expand your definition of health to mental and emotional.
Definitely.
And that's when, once you've done that, if you're still with me, let's talk about the fact that you don't even owe anyone health.
Exactly.
You know, at that point, it's like, all right, let's even talk about like this healthism, you know, and how healthism has really become the more like accepted version of diet culture.
Yes. That's so true.
I wish and hope that more people will understand that it comes, you know, weight loss and the perfect body, it all comes at a cost. You know, I was telling Katie before you got on the phone, like I went to the rheumatologist and he was doing his physical exam and he happened to notice my upper arm like covered in stretch marks because when I was younger, you know, I was much larger and I, you know, experienced weight gain very quickly, which resulted in, you know, pretty significant body scarring. And he looked at me and he's like, oh, were you much bigger at one point in your life? And this is after having given my like past medical history and explaining that I had an eating disorder and all this. And I said, yes, I was actually in a much larger body. And I gave him the number and he was like, oh, so you're part of the 5%, you know, the people who lose weight and keep it off. And I kind of just looked at him like, yeah. And it came with a cost. Yeah. Like, and that cost was my mental health. Like I lost so many years of my life. I've lost best friends. My family relationship suffered and all just to fit this, you know, unachievable goal. Like everybody's, you know, you have such a pretty face, if only you lost some weight. And and that was the comment that really stuck out in my childhood. And it just, you know, it's just really damaging how people perceive things and the comments. And it's just, how do you get people to understand how damaging it is to focus on the outside? And it's an uphill battle, and I feel like we are salmon swimming against the current all the time.
Absolutely.
Or even just talking about the 5% as though it's a number you would ideal, you know, place to be. And and I think a lot of us have also sort of come to this point where it's like, I don't even want to, you know, like I see it being problematic to even talk about people who manage to keep it off as though they have done something successful. I try to remind people, like when I was at my lowest at Weight Watchers, I was also smoking half a pack a day. Yes. I was not healthy.
Oh my God, totally. Yep.
And they, you know, the 5% they're referring to, I think is, it goes hand in hand with the National Weight Loss Registry that was started a while back just to like keep track of who is losing, you know, weight and keeping it off for, you know, 5 years or more. But what they don't take into account is those people that, you know, are losing the weight and keeping it off are usually engaging in some form of disordered eating. But because disordered eating is so widely accepted as a good thing because we're trying to get to the body type that's quote unquote healthy. It's just totally overlooked.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's also why body diversity is so important too, with covers like that, because not only is it, you know, it's like, if I think some people still operate under this assumption that if we could all take a magic pill, that would make us all a perfect size body, mm-hmm. and that we would all be happy. And I think, you know, then you sort of realize, well, maybe that isn't even a happiness. Like, you know, we body diversity is important. Yes. Diversity is important. Yes. We don't want to homogenize health. We don't want to homogenize body size. And so by doing that, you need to take the like ultimate unquestioned worth out of the smaller body itself.
Absolutely.
Look at us. We're getting so fired up. I can see like our, I can see like the voice tracks are just getting like bigger and bigger.
If you could see my face right now, it's bright red. I'm like agitated. It's good therapy.
Yeah.
I know, right? Okay. Oh, I can't believe we've already been talking an hour.
Oh my gosh.
We could keep going.
That is ridiculous. Yes. Oh my gosh.
So just tell us a bit, tell us about where people can find you and how people can work with you. And if there's any programs you've got coming up, let us know.
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on Instagram is probably the best way because you can link to my website and everything through there. And it's at thebodypositiveau. I'm actually working on finishing my intuitive eating certification at the moment. So I will be opening. I know. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Because I can't really, I can only sort of talk about it and guide people to the books and things. So I'll be keen to be able to work with people through that as well. So I'll be finishing that up and then I'll start some programs around that. And I'm always doing my 4-week exposure therapy intro, which you can, if anyone's interested, they can contact me. I do a lot of work over Skype remotely as well. So, yeah.
Now that we've scared everybody about exposure therapy, they're come sign up for it.
Yeah, guys, it's really fun.
I don't know. I find it kind of like a roller coaster. Like, I don't know. I find that there's something appealing about it. Like, you know, my bikini story ends with a happy ending of me wearing bikinis now.
I wanted to ask you that. Did you end up buying it?
I didn't buy it that time, but I certainly, when my weight was restored and I was done with dieting, I started wearing nothing but bikinis because I was like, damn. And that was actually, I posted a picture of myself and my daughter both in bikinis years ago when I first bought one. And it was like, it went viral. Like it got more likes than anything I've ever posted before because people see that, you know, they see that rush, that excitement. Yeah. And that is like progress. Yeah. That is like emotional progress right there.
Absolutely. Oh, that's amazing.
I wish you could see my face. I'm just smiling from ear to ear.
Me too. My chin. I know
this has been fantastic. I knew you'd give good interview.
Oh, thanks guys. It's been so good.
And there you have it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Hello Body. If you're enjoying this podcast, please take a moment to give us 5 stars. It only takes a few seconds and it really means the world to us and it helps other people like you find us too. If you would like to be a guest on this podcast or you have any topic ideas you'd like us to tackle, please send us an email at hellobodypodcast@gmail.com. All right, while I have you, make sure to head over to Instagram to follow us. At Hello Body Podcast. You can also find Melissa at her website, shamelessnutrition.com. And she's on Instagram at shame.less.nutrition. And you can find me at worthitwithkatie.com and on Instagram at worthitwithkatie, K-A-T-Y. Okay. Have a great day wherever you are, and we will be back soon with another episode.